Well, hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of TechNet Radio. We're on episode 7 in our Accelerating DevOps with the Cloud using Azure and sort of technologies. And today we're going to be talking all about configuration management. We've got a great treat for you. We've got a couple of special guests. Our co-host today, in addition to myself, is Young Cho. Hey, Young, how are you today?
Hi, Keith. Hello, everyone. This is Young Cho. I am a technology evangelist at Microsoft. I'm based in Washington, D.C. Hi there.
Great. Welcome to the show. And in addition to Young, we also have Michael Green, a senior program manager from our Windows Server and System Center CAT team, who specializes in automation and config management. You may know him from the Building Clouds blog. He does quite a bit of work there as well. Hi, Michael. Thanks for joining the show.
Hey, Keith. Thanks for having me.
Great, great. And before we get started, Michael, do you want to spend just a couple minutes giving everyone a bit of background on who you are, your role at Microsoft, and your background in your IT career?
Yeah, that sounds great. So I started at Microsoft in 2004, so it will be 10 years in September.
Wow, congratulations.
I just got to make it a few more months. So I started off at a partner over 10 years ago, working on infrastructure solutions, back in the Windows 2000 days. When I came to Microsoft, I was actually in a field position in sales, and I covered U.S. education as a technical resource for Windows Server. So I literally have traveled all but 6 states now and have gone to schools and universities all over the country and talked about Windows Server. And then in 2010, I switched over into a role within what at the time was called BPAWS, as it became Office 365. So I was a program manager and then a service engineer within O365 for 3 years. And wow. Then just recently, I came to Windows Server engineering to pursue my passion. Really, Windows Server all along been my passion, specifically in the areas of automation. So I'm sort of in my dream job at this point, getting to work on these technologies.
Oh, that's cool. It sounds really exciting. And when IT pros at various organizations out in the field, when they talk to me about beginning to adopt the cloud or maybe moving even on premises into a kind of a DevOps approach, why would you say configuration management is something that they should really consider, that it's important as part of that process?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think the word cloud in and of itself is something that you kind of have to define to start to understand that. So if you're talking about the context of the public cloud, where mm-hmm. you're trusting someone else and you're consuming their services, as you start working towards that, it starts to free up resources that you can focus on providing value to your business as an IT pro, and you can sort of refocus. So a lot of times when people who didn't previously have an opportunity to work with things like declarative configuration or automation, as they're transferring some of these workloads either to a hybrid scenario or to a strict public cloud scenario, it opens that door. And really, you can think about it as letting computers do what they're supposed to do, right? So take the mundane workloads that maybe you were kept you a little bit unsatisfied in your day-to-day routine as an IT pro, and start transferring those into automation workloads, and start looking at your IT within your business as more than just a cost center, right? As something that if you're letting the computers do what they're supposed to do and use these automation solutions, really it frees up your time between that and adoption of the cloud to start looking at how can we integrate better with the business and provide more value. And then if you're looking at the private cloud scenarios, it's really just about imperative, right? Because you start looking at how are the guys who are in operations ever going to scale themselves out working with the developers, working with the application. I say application owners because I think there's just as much an opportunity for people who are working with third-party products as there are people who are building in-house applications. So and that point of view, I think it's all about the operations guys being able to embrace environmental best practices. So they're sort of setting the rules and then making it easier for those application owners to live within those rules in a way that enhances their way of life and not one that acts as a boundary of any kind, right? And I think in both public and private cases, there's a lot of value.
Now, Michael, you mentioned configuration management. At some point in time, you also mentioned automation. I mean, are these two different? How do we take advantage of either one?
That's a really, really good question, and I think it's important people to understand. So when I think about configuration management, I'm thinking about whether you're specifically focused on applications, focused on managing servers, or even things like managing the network or hardware devices. It could be a NetApp storage device, as an example. When I think of configuration management, I think of how are we provisioning those devices, and then how are we making sure that over time, those devices stay within the boundaries that we've set for them. So if it's an application and I say, I want it to be configured a certain way, I deploy it that way, how can I be sure in a few months' time that it doesn't drift from that configuration? Automation, on the other hand, is more like a chain of events. So you can think about it as within that application, I want a workflow of events to occur. I want a user account to be created. I want some resources to be assigned to them, a series of steps that we should complete it. So it's not until you chain those two together and look at them as happening in concert that you really get the full benefit, where you can say as resources are becoming available, I'm automating my processes, and then I'm making sure that the configuration of my resources stays consistent. And by the way, there's really not another platform out there that offers both. If you look at what's available between PowerShell DSC and service management automation, or between PowerShell DSC and Azure automation, in either case, that automation component is one that if you look across the stacks that are available for hosting environments, it kind of stands alone in having that full suite of functionality.
Yeah, definitely. So it sounds like there's some huge opportunity for IT pros to really provide increased business value by using configuration management and automation to really take, get away from the multi-hundred page standard operating procedure documents that a lot of them are maintaining in enterprise orgs today. And by leveraging either packaged cloud services or even cloud infrastructure as a service with virtual machines in concert with configuration management and automation, being able to deploy more quickly as well as maintain sort of the release management of the configuration of the applications that are being deployed through their lifecycle. Is that right? Am I thinking about that on the right path?
Absolutely. So if you look at PowerShell desired state configuration, which is one of the technologies that can deliver the scenario we're talking about here, it actually offers three different capabilities in terms of deploying that configuration. You can do apply and monitor, and then apply and autocorrect. And when you're using that full apply and autocorrect, you sort of set your refresh interval and refresh frequency. But at that point, if one of the reasons I like kind of expressing it as declarative language, and we can talk more about what that looks like. It's declarative because you're declaring this is how that server will be configured. And I think it's interesting to kind of compare and contrast that with what we thought about in the past with group policy. In group policy, you said, this is how it's going to be configured, and I'm going to lock people out of that configuration, right? In a configuration management environment, you're going to express, this is how it's going to be configured, and then you're going to treat that as part of your deployment and as part of your ongoing configuration. And one of the things I really think is interesting for IT pros to start getting their heads around is this concept of version control, right? Mm-hmm. So if I've got a configuration that I've described in declarative language and said, these features of Windows Server should be present, these applications should be present, and these configuration settings and properties of that application should all be intact. Let's say that becomes version one. And we think about versioning of applications, right? Of 2012 came out, then 2013 came out, and things like that. We associate it with numbers or years. If you think about version control of your infrastructure, you can start saying version one of the way that this environment is supposed to be configured is the following hardware settings, the following operating system settings, potentially even applying through distributed models and web services how third-party applications and settings could be configured. And then you integrate that into your change model as opposed to making them butt heads all the time. So you can say, configuration 1.1, I'm going to introduce a new setting to my network adapter. Now, that's kind of crazy, right? We think about version control for applications and rolling out different versions of applications, but we can actually do version 1.1 of our configuration for our server and change infrastructure, fabric level changes as well. And then, obviously we could do 1.1.1 if we got to roll that back, right? But it's taking these lessons learned. The developers, the development side of the house has such a rich history with these types of stuff, and you can really kind of bring that in the operations side and get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, Michael, I really appreciate that because I think you bring out a number of good points. The version control, absolutely, I think it's a vivid connection towards the DevOps piece And that's why we're talking about this. That's why I think it's, you know, more and more IT pro need to recognize the opportunity presented to us to really leverage what we have learned, what we have experienced previously, and kind of make that connection with the DevOps and really make this a successful story for everybody. Now, I do want to get back to what you just mentioned. So it appears to me that the automation is the vehicle and it is the means, and the configuration management is the end. And with the PowerShell desired state configuration, sort of is the some tools and resources that we can kind of help us to facilitate that. Is that a correct concept?
Yeah, absolutely. So if I had to pick two tools that I wanted to have at my disposal to start approaching this world, they would begin with PowerShell and then Service Management Automation, which is actually available on the Orchestrator Media. So if you've got System Center Orchestrator, Service Management Automation it is available on that media as well. And you can start looking at that as a PowerShell-based method of automation. And then Azure Automation kind of carries that forward into a public cloud offering. Windows Azure Pack, if I was looking at number three, actually puts a GUI interface on top of Service Management Automation and further starts to serve as a platform, right? People start to think about, oh, is that my web portal for self-service? It's really much more than that, right? It's your platform for private cloud to start having one congruent or continuous interface between public cloud with Microsoft Azure and Windows Azure Pack on-premise. Matter of fact, a lot of the same PowerShell commandlets can be used across both places. But one thing, I've talked to a lot of customers about this, and one of the things that people are worried about, they start looking at DevOps, and they start looking at this shift in culture, and they think, does this mean it's time for me to retire all of the tools that I'm familiar with today and adopt just these new things? And I don't think that's what you have to do in any way. So if you're using System Center Configuration Manager as an example today, you know, you'd be familiar with things like deploying images using a task sequence. Well, there's no reason that in your task sequence, you can't configure that machine to point to a DSC pull server. It might be that you're using Windows Software Update Services to deploy security updates today. Well, there's no reason you can't use DSC to configure your machines to point to WSUS. So there's lots of opportunity here to take the tools that you already have invested in and take them to that next level. And I think IT pros right now have a unique opportunity to start understanding how do you combine all of these worlds, because it's not just for people who are developing applications in-house. A lot of these principles carry over very effectively into the IT pro world that most of us are familiar with.
Yep, definitely. And you had mentioned PowerShell, desired state configuration, DSC several times. For IT pros that are familiar with PowerShell scripting, kind of the more imperative side of the language, how would you characterize how PowerShell DSC is different than a normal PowerShell script?
It's a great point, a great question, and it's actually, I laugh about it because this is something I've even talked to a lot of people internally at Microsoft about. When we look in our own lab environment that we use for dev and test and that we use for simulating customer environments, I've had people ask, I've suggested, let's build this out in DSC, and they say, well, why? We've already got PowerShell scripts that automate this. And that may be the case. So what I started thinking through, it was like, oh, that's interesting. So why wouldn't you just build it yourself? So if we kind of walk down that path, right, we're going to organize this script into a specific format. We're going to go look for settings, and then if they don't match what we're looking for, we're going to set them. We want that to be in a workflow so that it can do checkpoint restarts and things like that. We want it to be idempotent. So that, in other words, if we run the same script five different times, it doesn't wreck our environment the second, third, and fourth time. It always has the same result. In a perfect world, we want the configuration of that to be something that we can just pick up and modify. So we don't want to have to read through the whole script and go track down the right variables. So we end up building XML files as answer files or JSON and things like that, and sort of creating that declarative nature on our own. So if you were to take that onto your own and build out that script, at the end of the day, you've basically built out something that looks like DSC. Right? So there's a whole community around DSC. It's obviously a Microsoft-supported solution, so if you need help, you've got some place to go. But I think it's the concept of DSC, if you put it in those terms, is not necessarily as new and as many of us think about. Oh, we've got to go learn something new. A lot of us have been writing scripts that follow these rules, and it's been working that way for a long time. DSC is just putting an official solution around it so that we can take advantage of that. So.
So Michael, you got a question for you. So you talk a lot about all this, and it's great, but you sort of specific to Windows workload. Is DSC specific to Windows workload, or what kind of options we have?
So a couple, I guess it was just last week, we actually had Chris Bash on the Building Clouds blog, and he introduced the capability of using Windows PowerShell DSC to manage non-Windows platforms. So that works through the OMI model, which is something that it's an open source standard. You can include that in your builds of Linux, and that will allow using web services PowerShell to go off and manage non-Windows platforms. And if you look at beyond just that capability of adding that into Linux, there's actually a whole page on the Cisco website about using OMI for managing network devices. And I think what's interesting, even looking beyond that capability, one of my favorite projects is to take on something that has a web service API and manage it using PowerShell. If you've got an OData front end and you've got PowerShell at your disposal, because it's PowerShell and it's just designed to work with this type of environment so fluently, it's so easy to create sort of an adaption for web services. And so I think even beyond if somebody says, well, I've got some application here that has an API that it needs to manage, or I've got some application here that the remote server has a web service front end. It could even be that the application has some sort of local executable or application that you can run. Anything that a PowerShell script can run, you can achieve results using DSC. So since you've got the opportunity to build these resources yourself or to use a script, the script resource, in either case, there's almost nothing you can't do. Definitely not a Windows-only solution.
So we can very much apply this concept, this methodology to Windows and non-Windows workload. It's almost too good to be true. What do you think, Heath?
No, it sounds great. It sounds like DSC is very extensible and has the potential to really simplify a lot of complex scripts that IT pros might have otherwise had to write with all kinds of conditional logic and, as Michael, you were saying, their own answer files and whatnot. By leveraging DSC, it's become something that they can easily adapt to and benefit from the large community that's building up around it. Well, so for a scenario, if as an IT pro, if I'm spinning up a virtual machine, maybe I'm spinning it up in Azure, Michael, would you be able to show us a quick demo of how PowerShell and DSC might be able to be leveraged to support configuration management around provisioning and managing the configuration of a workload inside of a VM?
Yeah, I certainly can. Would it be okay with you guys if I do a quick screen share and walk you through it?
Yeah, definitely. Let's do it.
All right, cool. So I'm going to Tarantino this. We can look at the results first, and then we can step back and take a look at the configuration and some of the resources that made that work, if that's okay.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds great.
So by the time that this goes to air, this resource will actually be in the PowerShell DSC resource kit. So for anybody who's watching this that might want to recreate it, this is publicly available. There's nothing here that is limited to my machine. I'll show you real quick that I do have, and I've got as the prerequisites, and this is all documented, but as the prerequisites, I do have WMF5 installed on my machine, Windows Management Framework preview from May. That's not required for what came with 2012 R2. In other words, is 100% okay for this resource. Also, I've got the Azure commandlets. So for Windows Azure, there's a set of PowerShell commandlets that you can install on your machine and use that to create resources and to deprovision resources as well, and to configure those resources once they've been provisioned right from your local workstation without having to go to the web page, and then it really helps you to automate that. So what we've got here is a DSC resource, or set of resources really, that make it possible to create a declarative configuration that provisions resources in Azure. So to maybe give a better understanding of how that's working under the scenes, and this is a little bit trippy here, but you're applying a configuration to your workstation, and your workstation is then provisioning those assets in Azure. And I actually have to make sure, I mean, I mentioned earlier that DSC can do apply and monitor, or apply and autocorrect. I have to make sure that I set it to apply only, right? Otherwise, every 15 minutes, if I were to go remove these VMs from Azure in 15 minutes, my machine would bring them right back. So I get to be a little bit cognizant of how I use this. But right now I've got just the one VM provision. This is from a test I was running yesterday. But you'll notice something interesting. So whenever I provision this, I actually assign an instance ID. And that's just a 10-digit identifier. And it's because when you look at some of the storage resources for blob storage, you actually need to be unique globally across all Azure customers. So that's why you see this concept of an instance ID. You'll see me working with that here. So if I run through it. So I'm going to run create. In my create script, I don't know if this, if the credential prompt is showing up for you or not.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, I'm just going to type in a username and password. And the reason is this is actually going to be the credentials that get set inside the virtual machine that's being provisioned in Azure. So what you're seeing now, my configuration script includes all the steps to generate a moth file. Oh, I didn't launch it as administrator, wouldn't you know? That's okay. We don't have to do anything special here. Let me just open a new window. See, that's a lesson that can be remembered from people who have watched this.
Yes, always run as administrator. So while you're doing that, if I understood your comment correctly and how the new Azure resource configuration module is architected for DSC, it's using your local management machine as a configuration management agent to manage Azure, right? So it's actually using like the LCM capabilities on your local machine to manage the configuration up in Azure?
Yep, that's exactly right. So this script is actually going to generate a moth file, and that moth file contains all of the settings. Now, in the example script that I provide in the resource, you'll see that you have the option to either let those credentials that I just entered sit in the moth file in clear text. If this is a text, if it's a test environment, chances are, you may be storing this password in a notepad file on your desktop anyway, right? So you have that option. And that's by default. You can also, if you have a certificate available on your machine, you can also use DSC to encrypt that moth file. So if you're using encrypt the credential portion of that moth file, really. So if you wanted to use this for production provisioning and deprovisioning of virtual machines for an application, you can do that as well. One of the things you'll notice that's fully supported in this resource that's available for Windows or for Microsoft Azure is the ability to take what's called a custom script extension approach to provisioning. So in this case, if you remember back at TechEd, Jeffrey Snover presented out PowerShell Just Enough Administration. Mm-hmm. So shortly after that, we blogged, did a preview release of this, and we called it X Azure VM Resource. And we're releasing it now as X Azure. But you can kind of imagine where that wants to go from here. But within that, there was an example script that provisions the VM. It takes the demo scripts that Jeffrey Snover used at TechEd, uploads them into your private blob storage, and then injects them into the virtual machine, and then kicks off a script inside the virtual machine that installs all the prerequisites and then uses DSC to configure that virtual machine so that it can be used so that you can test PowerShell Just Enough Administration on your own.
Wow.
And so you can imagine we've got two steps of DSC going on in this case. I'm using DSC on my workstation to provision resources in Azure. The VMs in Microsoft Azure can also use DSC inside so that you can apply a configuration as you're provisioning and then make sure that that configuration stays intact. And it's a great resource if you're an application developer to say, as I'm going through different builds, I want to incorporate this into my build process and test process. So maybe after I get to a certain point or a certain milestone, just include that in my script, kick it off, provision some VMs, do my test, tear it down whenever I'm done. It's really a rich functionality, and it's all possible because of the Azure Commandlets and PowerShell DSC.
Yeah, and that consistency, I think, is a key advantage that I see with PowerShell and DSC of being able to use one set of tooling consistently to apply configuration management and automation at the fabric level, for provisioning fabric resources like storage, networking, and virtual machines, as well as at the workload level, as you had mentioned, inside those virtual machines, rather than having to kind of piece together different tools for doing different things that might have completely different syntax around them, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Cool. Let me show you what just happened here, and then we'll look at the actual configuration script. But if the reason this all this yellow text is here is I've got verbose logging enabled within my example script. So you don't have to see all of this. And you'll notice at the end, all of this ran in a minute and 40 seconds. So if this is something that I just want to spin up, I don't even have time to go get a cup of coffee and come back, right? I just kick it off, let it finish. I ran status, which tells me the status of that VM. So, you know, just like any virtual machine that you're creating, the provisioning process where Windows setup goes through all the different phases of finishing out that machine completes, and I can come back and run this again. You'll notice I've still not gone to the Azure web page to actually provision anything.
Right.
In this case, because it's being run as DSC, it's actually executing the context of local system. So the first step is it registers my Azure subscription as the subscription that's being managed for that account. And that happens through that publish settings file. Now, you might be familiar with if you've the Azure panel. It's very easy to retrieve. There's literally a commandlet that takes you to the web page. You download it, and it has everything you need of it and you need from it inside of that. And then it creates the affinity group. And you'll see in the way that DSC works. So it's actually first, and by the way, I do output every step of the way the Azure subscription ID. And that's so that as things are happening, every time that it makes a change, it verifies that you're pointing to the right subscription ID. That might be important if you've got an SDN subscription and a paid subscription. Maybe you want to make sure that all of your tests are going into that MSDN subscription, and then whenever you're ready to go into production, you go into that pay-for subscription. So that's important. So it's going to go out and it verifies, does that affinity group exist? If not, it creates it. It goes through and looks for a storage account. Does that storage account exist? No? Okay, then let's go create one. As far as a cloud service, the same exact process. And then you get all the way down to, I'm just provisioning out one VM. Now, if I wanted to provision 10 VMs, I would use exactly the same process. And I'll show you what that looks like. But once again, it just goes through and verifies I've got the right subscription and then does a test. Obviously, the test didn't find anything. So it's going in here and doing a set, creating a VM. And then if we refresh this, we should, with the virtual machine status will change to provisioning, and then it'll change to ready roll or roll ready. But the final step of this, if you were carrying it all the way through, and then we'll switch over and look at our configuration scripts, I actually added a parameter in here for connection files. So one of the things that's interesting, you can remote desktop into these VMs. There's two endpoints, right? There's the remote desktop endpoint and there's the PowerShell endpoint. Mm-hmm. So if you run this connection files, it will do two things. It will download the RDP file, and then it will also grab the certificate for that virtual machine and give you the option of installing it here locally. So you can also do remote PowerShell. So if I look at, here's my test VM folder, I've now got an RDP file. So whenever it's done provisioning, I can just run that or double click on that connect.rdp file, and I can remote desktop directly in that virtual machine. I've got the certificate here. It's already been imported to my machine, so I can do connect to full admin. And then after I've connected to full admin, if you follow that documentation for the GIA test, you can also connect directly to a just enough administration endpoint and kind of simulate that more secure environment, what that would look like. So everything's right here. You can pretty much walk through anything you want to walk through.
Yeah, Michael, I think this is very exciting, not to mention that this is so lightweight and this is so dynamic. You have not even go to Microsoft Azure Management Point interface yet. You simply just do this remotely. This is incredible.
Using something like this, it allows all of those on-demand resources to be spun up in just a few minutes, leveraging a cloud platform like Azure that's elastic and extensible and use what you need when you need it, and not have to worry about taking those on-demand resource workloads and trying to treat them like traditional production workloads as a first step. And then once they get some comfort level for leveraging this for those dev and test and other on-demand resources, being able to take that knowledge and apply it back to their production environment, to apply that same type of configuration management to production, seems like a nice structured path for IT pros to start walking down. What's your perspective on that, Michael?
So I'll tell you, this has spoiled me. And the reason I say that, as an IT pro, you think about how we normally test things, right? So maybe a new version of something has come out, and I'd like to load it up and just kick the tires. So normally what I do, right? I've got my Windows 8 workstation here. I add the Hyper-V role. I reboot. It takes effect. I create a VM. I go find the ISO. I install the operating system, start playing with it. And then all of a sudden, I find out that Outlook wants to close because my machine is starting to slow down and I'm slowly becoming out of memory, right? Just because I'm running a virtual machine in my workstation here with me. So the beauty of this is that same scenario, The image is already stored in Azure. It's already up to date. I just click go, and it generally speaking takes less than 15 minutes for these VMs to actually complete provisioning and become available. So within 15 minutes, by the time it takes me to respond to a couple of emails, I've got some virtual machines available. I can remote desktop into them, test what I want to test. When I'm done, I just run the destroy script or just shut them down, because once you shut down the virtual machine in Azure, they stop billing you for it. Mm-hmm. So I want to come back to it tomorrow. I can just boot it up again. And during the course of the night, it wasn't actually costing me anything to let it sit out there.
Right. That's awesome.
So if I scroll down here, you'll kind of get a feel for the way this configuration script works. Let me take this out full screen. So line 37 here, actually, everything at the top is just notes that explains what's going on. It creates that instance ID. And then you'll see the actual configuration here. So you'll notice it imports the DSC resource for X-Azure. This is where it actually grabs my MSDN subscription out of that published settings file and makes that available, which is great. For a lot of IT pros have MSDN subscriptions and don't realize that there's this capacity sitting out there to just fire up a VM and be able to connect to it and use it for testing. It's just a great resource to have available. So there's all the settings for my affinity group. And you'll notice a lot of these are variables. So I'll show you, if we keep trailing down here, you'll notice the number one thing that's not a variable, two things actually. One is ensure present. So that's declaring the affinity group should be there. If I look at storage account, ensure that it's present. And I can also look at depends on. So I'm saying before I can create that storage account, make sure that my affinity group is present. Oh, we cascade this on down, you'll see there's my VM. In this case, I've got things commented out just here locally because I don't need to actually upload that payload to inject those additional scripts to provision that test environment. But there's nothing I can't do with that, right? If I want to upload a zip file and extract it and do more with it, and you're seeing more and more of these Azure guest extensions showing up all the time, so you can do more interesting things. In fact, just recently, they announced the capability of automatically provisioning antivirus or anti-malware solutions into your VMs at provision time. Mm. So you'll notice I'm not uploading a VHD image. And that's because Azure actually has a whole bunch of canned VM images. You can get the most recent, fully patched, this month's update all ready to go. You can also get non-Microsoft workloads. So if you want to provision a Linux machine, you can do that as well. And if I wanted to provision, 10 or 12 of these things, I just copy this section over and over again, give them different names. I might want the same settings. I might want different settings and carry that forward. And then this bottom section, you notice the whole way down, I was saying node and then specifying a property. And that's so that really everything I can consolidate into just this one section. So I can say, here's the name of my affinity group, or here's a naming convention it should follow, and so on and so forth as I go through each of the properties. And then finally at the bottom, this is the step, line 120, that actually creates the MOF file. I don't have to understand anything about MOF for that file to be created. I'm just running the configuration. This is all native to PowerShell. And then it applies the MOF file just by pointing it to that directory and telling it to apply locally. And then I've got some extra steps in here to surface out how long it took and things like that. But
wow,
it's really neat. I'll take a quick peek at what that DSC resource looks like. And let's look specifically at Azure VM. So I mentioned get, set, and test. This is a resource that's just following those steps. So I almost always, and we can actually collapse these sections to make it easier, but I almost always start with set. So if we want to investigate, hey, what's this thing actually going to run on my machine? This is just a normal function. The function names are the same as you go from resource to resource. So they always are get, set, and test, target resource. And those get exported as part of that resource. But you'll see down here, you can go through and look at what the Azure commandlets or which Azure commandlets are being called in provisioning of this virtual machine, and you can modify this. So it's actually encouraged, if you go out and look at the DSC resource kit, these get published as X resources or experimental resources. And that means that more than likely there's going to be a new version come out, and this is experimental in nature. In other words, it's not something that's been released by the Azure team. It's being released by the PowerShell team as experimental. Now, someday the Azure team may take these resources and release them. If they do, they would take the X off the front, right, and just make it the Azure DSC resource. There's a third option there, which is a C resource, and C would stand for community. So if you go out to PowerShell.org and you follow through to their actual GitHub repository for community-based PowerShell DSC resources, you'll find a lot of the X resources have been taken up by the community, modified to take them one step further, and then they name them. In this case, it would be something like PowerShell.org underscore C Azure, or just C Azure, if you had installed it and got the friendly name. But what that means is you're welcome to download it, rename it, make it your own, make it do extra things. If you're a PowerShell pro, there's really nothing you can't do here. So.
Great, awesome. And so if a company was, if an organization was going to take one of these base resources and extend it themselves, then the naming convention they might use might be their company name underscore resource name, something like that, right?
That's exactly right.
Great. Well, that looks really, looks like it really simplifies the process tremendously. I mean, just looking through that desired state configuration and looking at the simple values for present and for depends on, those two areas alone just eliminate a whole bunch of complexity that otherwise an IT pro would have to plan for with a bunch of conditional steps inside of a script to figure out, oh, this already exists, don't create it again, or it doesn't exist, create it. So it seems like it really simplifies. And by simplifying, also in turn, allows IT pros to deploy consistent configurations more quickly, but in a stable and reliable way too. So I think that addresses a lot of the points we were talking about at the beginning of our episode today.
Yeah, and also this is so lightweight. You look at the PowerShell script, it's tiny, small, and you can put it in a thumb drive. You can carry that with you anywhere, and all you need is a connection to a Windows Azure subscription once you set it up. And so this is so dynamic. It's like I never need to worry about, do I have the client or not?
Right, right, definitely.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly right. I don't know if you guys can see the remote desktop connection window that I've spawned off here.
It doesn't look like it's coming up. It might be on another...
Share. Yeah, the context, I'm sure, is changing. So in the background, actually, let me do this. So this should be coming across for you guys anytime.
Yep.
So
okay.
I've still not gone to any web pages. I'm still just operating in the PowerShell, but the last command that I executed was I just from PowerShell ran that connect.rdp file, and I'm now logging in over remote desktop into the virtual machine that's running in Azure.
So in theory, this could be plugged in from an enterprise standpoint into an entire self-service workflow process, right, where someone might kick off a request through Service Manager or maybe a SharePoint website form and have it picked up by Orchestrator or SMA or something like, and then have it actually kick the process off, wait for it to be provisioned, and perhaps even email back the RDP file to the requesting user. So that they never know, they don't even know that it's actually provisioning this workload up in Azure. All they see is they submit a request, and then a few minutes later, they get an emailed response back that says, hey, your new workload is waiting for you. Double-click on this file and log in with these credentials, right?
Keith, I think you've got a rich future in automation.
You know, this is something like I'm not sure IT Pro really recognized the opportunity presented to us. It's basically seamlessly extends your data center to Windows Azure, to Microsoft Azure. And what your customer care is about, they want that workload. They want that virtual machines. And you can provide them, and you can provision maybe in Brazil, which just recently opening in Microsoft Data Center, right?
Yep, definitely. And I think what it allows is, from an IT pro standpoint, it allows us to take our rich background in network infrastructure, virtualization infrastructure, storage infrastructure, operating system and workload management, and be able to address it in a way through PowerShell, through DSC, through configuration management and automation tools, be able to address that and present it back to the organization in a way that empowers them, that organization, our organization, to get things done more quickly, get solutions deployed more reliably, and increase the overall business value of what the IT organization is providing back. So that's really cool. Well, why don't we head back over to our desks and we'll finish up
sounds
our episode
good.
Today. Great.
That sounds good. You can see the last thing I'm doing here. I've got a create script and a destroy script. So we spun up RBM, we ran our test, I'm now doing away with it. And if I want to come back to it later, I just run that create again and then remote desktop into it. Just the whole process is very repeatable.
Awesome. Repeatable and consistent. That's awesome. Great. Yeah. Well, let's head back to our desk and we'll finish up our episode. Well, that was some awesome stuff. Thanks so much for sharing that demo with us, Michael. It looks like you had mentioned that Azure Resource Module should be available soon.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, by the time that this goes to air, I would expect it to be available. So at that point, you can actually use, if you're familiar with WMF5 Preview for May, it includes that find module and install module for the online gallery. So you can actually do find module X Azure, and it should be discoverable. And install-module will put it in place on your machine. All the example scripts and the README file are right there to walk you through it.
So that's part of the new PowerShell Git support, right, in 5.0?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Great.
Hey, Michael, I am officially one of your fans now, so I want to know where I can get your information, where I can subscribe your blog, where can I get all this great script that you have been providing to the community?
Well, good. If you go out to, and I'm sure we'll link this up, but if you go to aka.ms/bcb or aka.ms/buildingclouds, I'm part of the team that contributes to the Building Clouds blog. So I know you've previously interviewed Charles Joy. He's a great contributor as well. He covers a lot of automation concepts, a lot of deep dives into SMA. And we try to stay on the cutting edge. So where these new technologies are coming out, people are asking a lot of questions. How do we accomplish what we want to do? How do we look at our day-to-day tasks and automate them? And you know, we're not providing shipping products. We're taking the shipping products and showing you how to get familiar with them very quickly and providing examples so that you can start using these automation capabilities within your own business. So it's a lot of fun, and we've got a Twitter account that announces new posts of the blog, and obviously an RSS feed and things like that as well. So,
yeah, we'll be sure to post those down at the bottom of the page. So for those of you watching today, just scroll down the page, and you'll find links to all those great resources. Well, young Michael, thanks so much for joining us today. It was a really great episode. It opened my eyes, I know, to the value of configuration management and empowering me as an IT pro to provide better stability, better reliability, but increased performance and agility back to the organization. So thanks so much for joining.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It was my pleasure.
And I'm getting ready to start my design state configuration script now.
Excellent. I love
awesome.
It.
Awesome. And thank you, everyone, for watching today as well. As our episode on configuration management comes to an end and accelerating DevOps in the cloud, hopefully you'll come back and watch our forthcoming episodes. They'll be out in a few more days on other topics that relate to accelerating DevOps and solution delivery using Microsoft Azure and related tools as well. So thanks so much for watching. Look forward to seeing you on our next episode.